Welcome to another episode of the End Zone Podcast. Here it is Thursday night. At the time we are recording this, we are 2 days, well, under 2 days away from the start of divisional round weekend here in the NFL. And with that, our enjoyment for playoff football gets turned up close to the max. The max is Championship Sunday and Super Bowl Sunday, but we'll roll with divisional round weekend for now. And you know, with that being said, here on this podcast, we're a football podcast that wanders into the boundaries of trying to extend their hobbies of watching football into something that we want to do personally. So with that, I wanted to preview divisional round weekend. Unfortunately, you know, as you can tell, Eric is not here tonight. He had some real life stuff that he had to deal with. So he asked me to step in and record. So I wanted to bring on a handy, trusty guest that's come on the show plenty of times before to talk about a variety of things from Broncos to everything around the NFL. Mr. Joe Rules, you guys should all know him. He's been on the show before plenty of times before. Joe, how are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem, man. I'm really, really glad to have you on. I'm really going to need your expertise and your insight for a divisional round weekend because we have some really, really exciting games that are set to go down on Saturday and Sunday. We have the number one seeds in both conferences starting their playoff run or their potential playoff run on Saturday and Sunday. The Titans starting on Saturday and the Green Bay Packers starting on Sunday, which makes it kind of hard to start off with a game to choose from. But if I had to choose one game to pick from to start off with, I'll start with the Packers and 49ers. Like I mentioned earlier, the Green Bay Packers are starting their potential playoff run with a matchup against the San Francisco 49ers at home in prime time, I believe, and at a likely frigid Lambeau Field as always in January and around this time of year. So, Joe, the Packers starting their potential playoff run. I think the big story with them is that they're getting some of their big guys back, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. Head coach, Matt LaFleur says that he's hopeful of getting all pro corner Jair Alexander and standout pass rusher Za'Darius Smith, back for the game Saturday night, I believe. Saturday night, I believe, against the San Francisco 49ers. So, first off, if the Packers can really get those two guys back, does it really move the needle for them much, you know, if they have to face off against a Tom Brady or maybe a Matthew Stafford? Because with those guys last year, it just didn't look too easy for the Packers last year. So does it really move the needle much if they do have to run into Tom Brady in the NFC title game? That's if the Packers do win on Saturday night, of course.
Oh, I think definitely. Just because the Packers are going to need the best pass defense they can get if they're going to have a chance against Tom Brady. And Alexander is their best corner if he's anything close to healthy.
Yeah, and that's what's been so unimpressive by the pack or from the Packers as they tried to maneuver through this season without Jair Alexander for most of the year. He went out earlier in the year with a pretty serious shoulder injury. Don't quote me on that. I haven't been too caught up with the Packers as they've gone through the season. But, of course, adding those two guys back would be really, really detrimental for their playoff and potential Super Bowl hopes. I want to move over to the offensive side of the ball because the Packers really don't have a lot of things to warrant discussion at this point because it seems like they have the pieces. It's all about the functionality and how they can execute come playoff time. That was a big problem for them last year against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and it'll be a question for them this year. But moving over to the offensive side of the ball, them getting David Bakhtiari back should be huge for them. Them still having Davante Adams, Alan Lazard, that two-headed monster running back, and Aaron Rodgers, that quarterback. What's your stock for this Packers offense? Because, I mean, last year we were all on the train of saying, this Packers offense looks stacked, looks ready to go, but they, like I said, they came into the NFC title game against Tampa Bay and things sort of fell apart. So What's your initial stock for the Packers offense going into this playoff run?
Oh, I mean, I think the 49ers, they don't really have the secondary to keep up with Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say that Rodgers should have his way with the 49ers pass defense. The big thing is, especially if Nick Bosa is hampered, and we saw that he got hurt in the you know, the wildcard round, if him and Fred Warner aren't 100%, it's really hard to imagine how D'Amico Ryans is going to be able to slow down Aaron Rodgers in this passing attack. I think that they will probably be able to slow down Aaron Jones, but stopping Aaron Rodgers is a whole nother thing.
Yeah, 100%. And unless, like you said, D'Amico Ryans can come up with some crazy exotic plan defensively to slow down Aaron Rodgers, and it just doesn't seem likely that the 49ers will be getting too many stops against the Green Bay Packers offense. Now, I mean, I didn't want to spend too much time on the Packers anyway, so I want to move quickly over to the San Francisco 49ers. I think the one question with the 49ers at this point is, what version of Jimmy G are they going to get? Are they going to get the Jimmy G that isn't a liability, can avoid turnovers, that can stay, you know, respectable within the offense? Or are they going to get the Jimmy G that is a turnover machine and can't seemingly move the offense down the field at all? So, Joe, if I want to first, you know, I want to ask you two questions on this. First off, what are your, you know, what's your thoughts on Jimmy G so far this season, and even during that playoff game against the Dallas Cowboys? And if, even if good Jimmy G shows up against the Packers on Saturday night, would the 49ers have a chance?
Yeah, I think they definitely have a chance. The big thing with Jimmy G is he's kind of who he is at this point. You can count on him kind of just completely shutting off his brain once or twice a game and just throwing the ball up for grabs. And then he kind of struggles to identify where to go with the ball over the middle of the field. Obviously, both of those are pretty big issues. And then on top of that, he has the hand injury. But that said, the Packers are really weak up front on defense. They're not very good at stopping the run. And then the 49ers have proven that they can bludgeon people. On top of that, the Packers really struggle against teams who use motion to set up their running game, because it creates a lot of havoc before the snap and it gets guys out of position. And the 49ers use motion more than anybody.
Yeah, that's a good point that you bring up with motion, because I don't know if you've seen this in the same way as I do, but the Packers, some of the Packers' defensive issues have stemmed from the play of maybe of their inside linebackers, to the point where that motion, and we talk about, you know, motion being subtle yet somewhat dangerous little details that offenses can use to just throw defenses out of whack pre-snap. Are you seeing that the Packers, you know, middle linebacker play could somewhat take a little bit step off a cliff if this motion can get going? Because like I mentioned, you know, pre-snap motion can really throw off a defense pre-snap. And so I'm just, you know, not all that in tune with the Packers linebackers at this point. So I'm asking you, if you've, you know, seen a little bit of the Packers, do you think that the pre-snap motion that Kyle Shanahan loves so much, do you think that could really throw that defense for a loop, specifically their inside linebackers?
Yeah, I just think if you get them out of their position, what you're doing is you're creating running lanes. Because mm-hmm. then at that point, and the bigger issue, more than the linebackers themselves, because Devondre Campbell's been a steal for them. Sure. I think Chris Barnes is kind of a guy, but Devondre Campbell's been very good. But the big problem they have is, outside of Kenny Clark, they don't really have any like plus defenders up front. Their defensive line is pretty poor. And because they try and play out of a lighter box, they end up, they're relying on Devondre Campbell and the linebackers to clean up more often. And I don't think they're going to be able to do that against the 49ers, because the 49ers do a really good job of playing out of base personnel. So you can't just sit nickel. You have to play out of your 3-4. And it's going to expose the fact that the Packers don't really have good defensive linemen.
Yeah, that's a good point you bring up about Devondre Campbell. That's one of the – he's been one of the more unsung heroes of the Packers defense. You can actually call him somewhat of an unexpected surprise, given his journeyman status throughout his career. Have you what do you make of his, you know, sort of career resurgence that he's had this year, and how his, you know, his play could play in as the Packers try to, you know, get back to the Super Bowl?
Oh, I mean, I think he's going to be one of their key parts of their defense, just because, again, up front they're so weak.
Yeah, and I really get it. It's a shame, though. It's a shame because usually, and I'm not sure how the situation was last year, you know, because I'm so busy with a lot of things, but I didn't see the Packers being some sort of, you know, pushover in terms of being, and you know, in terms of a run defense, really. So, you know, did you see that at all, really?
Yeah, that is definitely the biggest weakness of their defense. When I looked at this earlier, they're actually 25th in Football Outsiders adjusted line yards, which means that they allow a lot of yards up front, and that's attributed to their defensive line. They are actually, they very, very rarely get stuffs, and then they're actually weakest between the tackles, which makes sense because, again, outside of Kenny Clark, they don't really have a whole lot of help. And then outside runs. And that is a reflection of what happened basically with Za'Darius Smith not being completely healthy. So,
yeah. That makes a lot more sense. What have you seen out of Deebo Samuel this year? Because, I mean, this year has been the year that Kyle Shanahan has started to go to the drawing board and think of, you know, a lot of different ways to get the ball into his hands, which is, you know, what a good play caller and offensive mastermind does. So, what do you think of the way that the 49ers have used, you know, Deebo Samuels, not only as a receiver, but bringing him in as an extra runner in the backfield and different types of sub packages offensively?
I think there's going to be a lot of teams after this playoff run that try and turn somebody on their roster into a Deebo Samuel and do it very poorly, because Deebo Samuel is quite good at breaking tackles. Mm-hmm. And he combines that with the kind of vision that we see when he's running the ball. Because that's kind of the underrated aspect of what it takes to be good at, like, as a running back, is having the vision and the decision-making power to know when to go and when to cut, when to press the hole.
Mm-hmm.
Campbell has that, or Samuel has that. But a lot of receivers, they've never had to do it before. So I do think that that's one of those things that makes him pretty special. I think it was kind of a happy accident on Shanahan's part, but I think they found a unicorn.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you on that. I want to move on to a little bit of a prediction here, because I don't want to spend too much time on this game since we have a couple of other games that I really want to talk extensively about. Joe, what's your prediction for Packers 49ers?
I think the Packers are going to win by probably about 7.
Yeah,
I think the one exception being if the Packers have a really bad special teams. If the Packers allow scores on special teams, I think they're going to probably lose a close game. But I do think the Packers, the fact that they have Aaron Rodgers and the fact that they have the firepower on offense, when the 49ers, this 49ers team is probably every bit as good as the 49ers team that made it all the way to the Super Bowl a couple years ago, except for the fact that they don't have the secondary.
Yeah, and that's a shame, because defensively, I think D'Amico Ryans has really done some good things this year without having the secondary pieces necessary to make this defense as complete, which you make a good point about there. As for my prediction, I think I'll take the Packers here as well, maybe a score of 31 to 49ers 18. I just think the Packers are too talented on both sides of the ball, and the 49ers are too many liabilities on both sides of the ball. I think it boils down to something as simple as that. Joe, I want to move on to a game that's going to go down on Sunday. We have the Rams, Los Angeles Rams, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm actually really excited for this game, Joe, because we were all throughout the season trying to figure out what the Rams were and if they were this big Super Bowl contender everyone had made them out to be after they made these high-profile personnel moves with Odell Beckham Jr., Von Miller, you know, just trying to set this team up for, you know, their first Super Bowl run since I believe it was 2017 when they got there with Sean McVay and Jared Goff leading the helm at quarterback. Joe, I think, and with the Bucs this year, I think it's a different sort of vibe around them this year, don't you think? Because defensively, you know, during the Super Bowl run last year, the Bucs were advertised as this steady offensive unit that had a bunch of weapons. Wide receiver Leonard Fournette was playing well. The offensive line was playing well, and Tom Brady was, well, being Tom Brady. And defensively, they were playing like one of the best units we've seen in recent postseason history. Which they were, you know, a historic unit, just breaking down records and breaking down teams that stood in their way en route to their first Super Bowl title in years. So, Joe, is the vibe different around this team this year because they've had so many injuries on the offensive side of the ball, because the defense just hasn't really looked the same?
I mean, I don't know if the vibe is different, but they're definitely a weaker team than they were before. Just because without Antonio Brown, without Chris Godwin, the offense is going to have a harder time moving the ball now than they did through most of the season, because during the season, they played one of the easiest schedules in football. And then on the other side of the ball, the Bucs run defense isn't great. It's been better once David got back. But I do think that the Rams are going to be able to move the ball on the ground a little bit, probably outside. But the Bucks, not the Bucks, the Rams run a good bit of outside zone, and they have the personnel to move the ball on the ground. The big thing for them is going to be how much they blitz Matthew Stafford, and then how Matthew Stafford responds to it. Matthew Stafford's been one of the better quarterbacks all season against the blitz, but we've also seen him give the ball away. So if he plays like he did against the Cardinals, I think the Rams are going to win this pretty easily.
Yeah, and you know, looking over what the Bucks have, you know, in terms of issue at wide receiver, I mean, you have Mike Evans, you have Gronk at tight end, you still have OJ Howard, and you still have Cameron Brate at tight end as well. But you know, Leonard Fournette's still dealing with injury. Ronald Jones is dealing with an injury, and then you know, Chris Godwin is gone, Antonio Brown is gone. I mean, where would you look, you know, aside from maybe Gronk and Leonard Fournette when he gets back? Who would you look at on this Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense to make some plays and just step up so, you know, the offense won't have too much trouble moving the ball down the field?
I think Tyler Johnson might be a guy to keep an eye on. I also think Rashad Perriman might be able to contribute. And then obviously Mike Evans. Those are kind of like the big three. I know Brady has gone here and there to Scott Miller. But it's going to be a lot of checkdowns, and it's going to be a lot of like playing to the tertiary receivers, which is the running backs and the tight ends. Just because the Bucks are going to, especially if Wirfs is hurt, and every sign is that if he does play, he's going to be banged up like he was at the end of that game or during the wild card game, how he got hurt. So the fact that the Rams have Aaron Donald and Von Miller, they're going to be able to get pressure on Brady, and Brady's going to have to get rid of the ball quickly.
100%. And you know, just taking a quick look on the defensive side of the ball, I haven't seen really too much noise from that vaunted Tampa Bay Buccaneers defensive line that made so many headlines, you know, last year and you know, of course, during the playoffs. I mean, I haven't heard too much from Shaquille Barrett. I haven't heard too much from the rest of their, you know, vaunted defensive line, and even the secondary. They've had so many injuries throughout there that they've had such a revolving door of corners, and I believe even, you know, some of their you know, starting options and safeties have missed some time as well this season due to injury. It just hasn't been a complete unit for too much time, you know, throughout this season. Do you think if this Tampa Bay Bucks defense, if they can get some of their guys back healthy, do you really think they could get back to that form that they had last postseason? Or does it feel like, or, you know, not feel, but does it look like it's a little too late for them to do so?
I don't think they have the secondary that they did last year, and I think that's going to be the biggest thing. I know that they have the players, but I don't think they've been playing as well. I mean, they could. They definitely could. They have the personnel. But I don't think the offense is going to be good enough. And because of that, if teams can keep games close and limit the quarterback's exposure to the pass rush, I think that's going to be a problem, because when the Buccaneers have to play equal, like actually give equal respect to the run and pass game. They haven't been as good this year. And again, this is going to be one of those big issues they have against Stafford, because Stafford's been really good against the blitz, and the Buccaneers are the team that calls blitzes more than anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, just going back to what you said about the secondary, do you think it's a matter of maybe those secondary players falling back to the norm, you know, for them in terms of personal performance, or do you think they're just having like somewhat of a down year?
I just think coverage, like, I mean, and it goes hand in hand. I think pass rush and coverage kind of goes hand in hand. When your pass rush isn't quite where it was, it makes it harder for the corners. I also think the corners for a big chunk of the year were playing hurt. This isn't to take anything away from him. I think Carlton Davis is very good. Yeah. And also the Rams, outside of Cooper Kupp, they don't have a singular weapon that's going to be like a huge mismatch, but they do have Cooper Kupp. And I don't know if anybody on the Bucs is going to be able to keep up with them.
Yeah, and it's weird to kind of say that, because those corners played so well last year that it's kind of hard to see them not, you know, at least somewhat finding some sort of good form throughout this postseason, because they've been there and they've done that. They've had the film, you know, they put out the film, and I don't know. It'll be a weird sort of look over for the Bucs defensively, specifically in that secondary as postseason goes on. I want to jump a little bit over to the Rams here. I want to start offensively. I know you're talking about Matthew Stafford, how he's had a bit of a turnover problem this year. Some have said that maybe it's due to, you know, this and that, you know, who knows, you know, what the reason has been with Matthew Stafford being such a turnover prone player, even after getting out of Detroit. But, do you think this turnover problem is just something, you know, it's in his blood, it's just who he is as a player, or has there been something else fundamentally wrong that you've seen this year?
I think the big thing is he takes chances, and sometimes that gets him in trouble. The big thing that's kind of telling with Matthew Stafford's issues is he's so good against the blitz, but if he has a lot of time to sit back and make reads, that's where he'll make mistakes. But I think it's just making mistakes. Part of it might be new scheme, might be trying to do too much. Some of it's just boneheaded plays. But at the same time, we just saw him tear apart the Cardinals. So I think if he can keep out of his own head, I think the Rams are one of the most dangerous teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of weird to, you know, envision Matthew Stafford just playing so loosely with the football when he has such an impressive arsenal of weapons around him that he could throw the football to. I mean, Cooper Kupp, you know, almost set the receiving yardage record this year. Van Jefferson is a serviceable wide receiver. I mean, Odell Beckham Jr., he isn't the same game-breaking wide receiver that we saw in New York, but he's still a very good wide receiver that can somewhat stretch the field and can provide some value down in the red zone. And I mean, even with the run game, you know, Sonny Michel has been good in limited capacity. I mean, Cam Akers ruptured his Achilles a day before training camp, all the way back in, you know, the summer of 2021. Came back for, I believe his first game back was against the Cardinals in the wild card round, and looked like the same player he was before he got the injury, maybe even better. So do you think it's just, I mean, and I keep going back to Stafford, because Stafford's play just seems like the one variable that could make or break this Rams team, and if they could get to the Super Bowl or not. You know, is Matthew Stafford that big of a wild card, or do the Rams really just have the supporting cast around him to somewhat avoid that if he does get into that, you know, habit of, you know, putting the ball in harm's way too often?
Well, I don't think their running game is as good as their conventional stats suggest. And that means that they're more dependent on Stafford to be good. But that said, I think they're not great in short yardage. And that could be an issue in this game, because the Bucs are quite good in short stopping short yardage plays. But yeah, it does boil down to Stafford, if only just because the Rams offensive line is good, but it's not as good as it was. And their running game, like you said, with Akers coming back from an injury, he's not quite where he was. And so you're down to Sony Michel and kind of like whatever you can get out of the backups.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know. Maybe that run game could get going if Cam Akers continues to get those snaps, because he did look really good on Monday night against the Cardinals, you know, looking every bit as the player that he was before he had that bad Achilles injury. So we'll see if he can get that run game going and start showing some sort of bark and bite into it, at least in that capacity. I want to move defensively because the Rams defense, you know, last year, the Rams defense, which is, you know, I guess it wasn't some overly dominant unit, but the statistics did show that Rams defense, one of the best in football last year, in terms of points per game, yards per game. They were just really putting the handcuffs on teams and not allowing offenses to get too much success against him, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So this year, you know, has that, you know, Rams defense really been the same as that unit as last year, or has it just taken a little bit of a step back, you know, as expected, because that type of defensive play that they had last year doesn't really seem that sustainable?
Well, they lost their starting safeties, and that's part of it. Mm-hmm. And then there's also been an adjustment period, just as they traded for Von Miller. They had a couple more injuries than they had last year. They traded away Kenny Young. So I don't think they're as good as they were last year, but I do think that they're getting good at the right time is the big thing. And like I mentioned earlier, I think the fact that Tristan Wirfs is almost definitely going to be less than 100%, I think that's a huge matchup in their favor. I think Ashawn Robinson has played really, really well this year. Aaron Donald should be Defensive Player of the Year. Like the matchups are in place for them to have a very good day against the Buccaneers.
Yeah, that makes a good amount of sense, especially if Tom Brady can't get the ball out of his hands like he usually is able to do in the postseason. So we'll see how that goes down. Joe, do you have a prediction for Rams-Buccaneers? Because it's shaping up to be a real fun game to watch.
I think the Rams are going to win, and I think the Rams are going to win by probably at least 10.
Yeah, I had that same feeling because, you know, because of the pass catching situation in Tampa Bay and because that defense doesn't look all the same as it did last year, I think the Rams can really come in there and just get out a win and advance in the NFC Championship game. And if they do match up against the Green Bay Packers, then, you know, that will be a fascinating matchup simply because it's that the Rams did, in fact, play the Packers earlier this year and they just didn't match up well with them. So, we'll see if that does come to fruition, and you know. But first, we have to see if the Rams and Packers can pull off W's on Saturday and Sunday, respectively. We talked about the NFC's first two games, not on purpose, but actually on accident. So we'll slide over to the two remaining divisional round games that reside in the AFC. First, I'm going to go with Titans-Bengals. Joe, I know I'm the sort of expert, I guess you could say, on Titans, but I still want to get your insight on this game specifically, because the Bengals come into this game possessing one of the more dangerous offenses that we've probably seen in the playoffs. You know, maybe they aren't better than the dangerous Chiefs offense that we saw when Patrick Mahomes was first coming on the scene, but they're a freaking dangerous offense, man. So what stood out so large about that offense, aside from the vertical passing game that's taken a lead by storm?
Oh, just Burrow. Burrow is so good if it gets pressure, and he has the weapons to really attack the Titans secondary. Mm-hmm. The big thing the Titans are going to have to do in this game is they're going to have to create pressure, and they're going to have to create pressure quickly. And I think the way to do that is with Jeffrey Simmons, obviously, and then just create, like, bringing heat down the pipe. The Bengals are really weak at right guard, and they're not great at right tackle.
Yeah, and that's been one, you know, or two areas that I've seen a couple people, you know, trying to watch this game closely that I've seen them mention often, you know, because that left side seems starting with Quentin Spain, and I believe it's Jonah Williams on the left side. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but that right side has been, you know, an area of concern from the Bengals' point of view that I've seen mentioned often, not just, you know, leading up to this game, but throughout the season as well. So, you know, you mentioned Jeffrey Simmons and him being a key, you know, sort of factor for this Titans defense to slow down this Bengals offense. But, you know, I think the Titans employ four different kinds of pass rushers on that defensive line that
really allow them to play a variety of different coverages, and that can make them confuse opposing quarterbacks. So, you know, I don't know if you watched the Titans a lot this year, but it, you know, is there anything you've seen maybe overly special from the Titans in terms of coverage variety? Because I've seen the Titans use a different assortment of coverages, you know, and not just, you know, saying, you know, cover two, cover four, cover six, you know, cover zero, cover one man, cover two man. I'm just saying, you know, them bringing different packages and giving different looks in those two basic, or the, not those two basic, but those basic assortments of coverages. So is there anything, you know, different that you've seen? You know, I guess what I'm trying to say is that have you seen different sorts of details in the way the Titans play coverages defensively?
Yeah, who is where? And I think Steven Ruiz of The Ringer pointed this out, and he did a really good job highlighting it, is the fact that who is dropping where is not always going to be set. So mm-hmm. if you just think it's, oh, yeah, it's cover two, it might be cover two, but who is dropping into the deep half might not be the safeties. It might be a corner and a safety. It might be somebody else. And what that's going to do is that's going to make Joe Burrow have to find where he's going with the ball and keep an eye on who's dropping post-snap. And that's going to create more work for him and give the rush more time.
Yeah, and, you know, if Burrow is forced to hold on to that ball a little bit more often, he hasn't, you know, he's shown a willingness to dump the ball down, get the ball out of his hands, and not hold on to it too quickly so he can avoid that big yardage loss via sack. But, you know, I don't know, and I don't know if Burrow has been this type of player since he's came into the league, but do you think if the Titans can force him to hold on to that ball a little bit more longer than he would like to and force him to take some shots down the field when they're really not needed, you know, just to force him in different sorts of coverages that could lead him into mistakes? Has Burrow really shown a tendency to maybe do that because he's been so aggressive throwing the football down the field this year?
I mean, Burrow hangs in the pocket if he has to, and that's part of the reason why the Bengals are allowing sacks on 9.1% of their dropbacks. Chicago is actually the only team that is allowing sacks on a higher percentage of their dropbacks. And as we know, sacks are a quarterback stat. Part of that is also obviously the Bengals offensive line isn't great, mm-hmm. but the fact that Burrow is fearless, which is part of the reason why the vertical passing game is so good, but also as part of the kind of the cost of being fearless is that he will take some shots.
Yeah, and with those shots, you know, nobody's faulting him for taking those shots because Ja'Marr Chase has been insane running those vertical routes and catching the football down the field. T. Higgins is a jump ball threat. Tyler Boyd can be a vertical threat in the passing game, although he's more of an underneath the intermediate type of receiver that operates mostly out of the slot. So what I really want to, you know, sort of evolve this discussion into is, you know, what do you do about this Bengals offense? Because they have three really, really good options at receivers. CJ Uzomah is a decent option at tight end. And Joe Mixon, I believe, was the second leading rusher in the league. Correct me if I'm mistaken. But what do you do about this Bengals offense? What, Joe, would you do in terms of finding a plan to attack this Bengals offense and force them into mistakes and maybe force them into some sort of failure, you know, of some sort on Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, like I said, I think you have to bring a lot of pressure off that right tackle and right guard spot. I would aim specifically at that right guard spot as much as you can, just because Hakeem Adeniji for the Bengals is probably the weak link of their line. And he has been had in quite a few games this year. And I think that the Titans have the personnel to abuse that. And then I think you just have to try and play zone coverage over the top of it, because I don't think the Titans match up particularly well against Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd. But I think if you play zone, make them try and go the length of the field slowly, at some point the pressure is going to get home enough to get ahead of the sticks. And then what you do is you force them into third and long and you try and heat them up.
Yeah, and if the Titans do indeed do that, then I think some more attention will be focused more on the run game that the Bengals and Zach Taylor really wants to establish week in and week out. What are you seeing out of Joe Mixon? Because, I mean,
the wide zone, outside zone, inside zone, maybe even some more of the traditional counter duo blocking schemes that you know that we've traditionally seen in the run game, you know, going back to years, you know, all the way back to maybe the early portions of the NFL, we've seen just traditional dual blocking schemes. So what have you make of this Bengals run game? Because it isn't poor, you know, maybe it's just a little bit, you know, undervalued and flies a little bit under the radar because the Bengals have had so much success throwing the ball down the field.
I think the biggest problem with the Bengals offense run game is that the Bengals offensive line isn't very good. But that said, they're pretty decent at outside zone. Joe Mixon does display really good vision. I think he'll make the most of it. And then they'll mix in split zone, inside zone, and a little bit of pin and pull power and counter. But like I said, I think the difference in terms of talent along the offensive line, defensive line really favors the Titans. And I do think it's going to be really hard for the Bengals to consistently gain yards on the ground in this game.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, sort of brings me back to that Titans defense. Because, you know, that front four, you know, I mentioned the front four, they get a lot of pressure just rushing forward because they've been so good rushing the passer. Danico Autry, Jeffrey Simmons, obviously, Harold Landry, and even Bud Dupree has been really good over the past month or so when he's finally gotten the chance to get healthy. So, do you really see the potential for this Titans pass rush to really cause a lot of problems for Burrow? You know, since you mentioned that's one of the key points that if the Titans want to win this game and slow down Joe Burrow, they will have to get a lot of pressure, you know, specifically on that right side of the offensive line.
I do. I watched a lot of Bengals leading up to the Bengals game against the Broncos, and the Broncos were able to generate a lot of pressure, and the Broncos don't have anywhere near the defensive personnel the Titans do.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting, though. that's kind of interesting because aside from the front four, their linebacking core, you know, the guys that do the dirty work, Zach Cunningham, David Long Jr. has really emerged this year. You know, Rashawn Evans, even though he's underwhelming, he can step in and be a physical presence. And even Jayon Brown, who's a little bit of an undersized linebacker, but brings some coverage skills to the table. What you know, how big of a role do you think those inside linebackers will play, especially, you know, if the Bengals have to ear on the side of trying to air the football out down the field?
I mean, I think the Bengals will try and isolate and attack the Titans linebackers in coverage. Mm-hmm. The Bengals, you'll see probably Uzama and you'll see Boyd probably work the middle of the field a bit. They will try and use Jamar Chase on crossers. T. Higgins will do it some, but T. Higgins is best downfield. He doesn't have the same kind of lateral quickness to create separation consistently underneath. But I do think that the linebackers of the Titans is probably the weakest part of their coverage. I think the pass rush is going to be good enough that it won't matter.
Yeah, that makes a real decent amount of sense. I want to move on to the Titans offense because I think if the Titans really want to go as far as they want to go, I think that offense is going to have to break out of the shell and, you know, in terms of failure and disappointment that they've been in over the past sort of, let's say, month and a half to 2 months without Derrick Henry and without, you know, mostly without A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, as, you know, as they've dealt with injury. What's the outlook for this Titans offense? You know, I mean, I guess I would probably be the best person to answer this, but from an outside perspective, you know, the Titans are getting Derrick Henry back, but we don't know how he's going to look after he had surgery to, you know, repair that foot injury that he suffered. You know, A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, you know, especially Julio Jones, he's been in and out of the lineup, and, you know, even when he's been in the lineup, you know, he's dealt with an issue of falling out of games and just not really getting involved. I mean, and Ryan Tannehill has been a bit of a turnover, you know, bit of a turnover machine this year. So from an outside perspective, what's your outlook on this Titans offense after they finally start to get their main guys back just in time for the playoffs?
I think the Titans are a wild card on offense, and that's honestly what's going to end up deciding this game. I think the defense is going to do enough to make the Bengals work for every point, but I do wonder if the Titans offense is going to come alive because they've been so banged up all year. I want to say that I want to say AJ Brown, Julio, and I think they've played together in like a couple games. Like they haven't been together very much all year, which is part of the
20 something snaps.
And that's one of the reasons why, like, I look at Ryan Tannehill's production numbers and I don't really fault him. Just because, and I know you and I talked about this before the season even began, before the Julio trade. So this is a while back now. But I told you that I was down on the Titans because I didn't think they had enough receivers.
Yeah.
And then for most of the year, they didn't have their receivers. So I don't really fault Tannehill's numbers. The fact that he was able to figure out ways to win kind of really speaks to him. And I do think that if all those players are back to healthy and ready to really like ready to go, I think we could be surprised by how efficient Tannehill looks, because this Bengals secondary is not great. They really live and die with how much pressure they can get on you.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point you bring up about their secondary, because, you know, Trey Henderson is supposed to be healthy. And when Trey Henderson is healthy, that entire Bengals pass rush can really step it up to an entirely new level. So it'll be interesting to see, because that Bengals, you know, defensive line, when Henderson is healthy, they're pretty nasty. So it'll be interesting to see how that matchup unfolds on Saturday afternoon. Joe, do you have a prediction for Titans Bengals? It's probably one of the more difficult predictions of the weekend, honestly.
Yeah, I'm going to say that this one is going to probably end up being a toss up. I'm going to probably take the Bengals just because I know what they can do. But I would not be surprised if the Titans come out of this game with a win. The Bengals have an issue defending wide receiver twos. They're not great. Like I said earlier, they're not really great in pass coverage outside of Chidobe. Eli Apple's been okay, but he can also get got. And I think if Julio is remotely close to healthy, I think Julio can probably go up and win downfield on him. And I think Tannehill won't hesitate to try that. Basically, the Bengals have to get a pass rush to win this game. And the Titans have a good enough offensive line for the most part that I feel pretty good about it. So I do think it's going to be a toss up. I think the one matchup to really kind of keep an eye on in terms of the Titans is what happens with Queenisberry. Just because he's a better run blocker than pass blocker. And the Bengals do have Sam Hubbard, and the Bengals are not going to hesitate to bring Mike Hilton on nickel blitzes, which is going to test the pass protection anyway. Amarumo, I always slaughter his name, but he's kind of like a baby Zimmer in terms of like the way he calls a game. If the Bengals get behind, or if the Titans get behind the sticks on third down, so like third and six or more, the Bengals are going to mug the line and bring six people to the line. Might be two linebackers, might be a linebacker and a safety, might be two DBs. They don't always come, but they come enough to make you fear it. And they're going to try and heat up Tannehill.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point that you bring up about, Amarillo being sort of a baby Zimmer and stacking the lineup with guys pre-snap, because Tannehill's had a couple instances this year where he's produced some turnovers because he's, you know, getting confused by looks, you know, by, you know, jam-packed looks at the line of scrimmage, you know, in terms of bodies. So that's an interesting point. You bring up about that sort of facet about the Bengals defensively. I think I'm here on the same side as you. This game's a toss-up. The Bengals are probably the hottest team throughout the rest of the playoff field right now. I mean, so much young talent in the wide receiver core. Very good, not very good, but a respectable option at tight end in terms of CJ Uzomah. Joe Burrow is playing really well. Joe Mixon isn't no slouch. And that Bengals defense, although, you know, we mentioned that their secondary is a little bit weak, that pass rush can be pretty nasty at times. So Titans will have to be on the lookout for that each and every time they step out on the field. So with all that said in mind, I think you're on the side of caution. I'll pick the Bengals here because they just have the more proven success in terms of, you know, offensively, defensively, well, maybe not defensively, but offensively at this point. So, but if the Titans offense can really get into a groove early, that run game can really
help control the clock, and Ryan Tannehill can avoid mistakes, and offensive coordinator Todd Downing can get A.J. Brown and Julio Jones involved early, then I think the Titans will win because, you know, like Joe said, the Titans are the wild card. You know, Titans offense is the wild card in this game. If Titans offense can really get going, then, I mean, I just don't see how the Titans lose this game. They struggle. Then I see the Bengals walking down the Nissan Stadium with a W on Saturday afternoon. So let's move on to the final game of divisional round weekend. It's probably the best game on the schedule. I hope you agree with me there because we have the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills at Arrowhead. It's going to be, you know, like I said, the best game of the weekend. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, two offenses that can really put points up on the board. I think this sort of matchup is going to be more hype than the Chiefs and Bills matchup last year when so many were, you know, hot, you know, hopping on the Bills bandwagon and the Chiefs, you know, were the Chiefs. So, Joe, what's your overall feeling about this matchup leading in, you know, just diving in? Because both of these offenses have shown some sort of resurgence over the past couple weeks, you know, not just past couple weeks, but months and months. Leading up to this, you know, this matchup, you know, what's your overall feeling about this matchup right now?
If the Bills get good Josh Allen, they can beat anybody in football. But their offense is so dependent on Josh Allen being great that this game should be a very, very good game. But from a Chiefs perspective, if you can get Josh Allen off kilter, I guess is the right word to say it. But if you make Josh Allen press or force him into some mistakes and trap him, I think the Chiefs could end up blowing them out. If only just because, again, the Bills don't have like a left hook. Like if Josh Allen is not on, the running game collapses.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that's 100%. What'd you say on that? That's accurate. 100%. Before I get into that, though, I want to talk about, you know, that Chiefs defense. You know, that Chiefs defense is going to be the main reason why, if Josh Allen struggles, that's probably going to be the main reason why, because they've really underwent a resurgence probably ever since, you know, they gave up 27 points to the Titans in the middle part of the season. So you're the AFC West connoisseur, the AFC West expert right now. So what have you seen specifically, if you have seen the Chiefs in some sort of action in the limited time that you have? What have you seen, you know, schematically from the Chiefs that they've done to switch up from their poor form earlier on into the season and into a unit that's respectable, at least?
Oh, man. So the big thing is obviously, and this they talk about this in most broadcasts, but Chris Jones moving to playing more inside snaps.
Yeah.
That has been the ultimate key. I also think the Melvin Ingram trade was one of the sneakier steals of the season. They will use him as an edge rusher, but a lot of times what he does really, really well is he does a good job of working inside, mm-hmm. Where he is a mismatch for most guards. They've also cut Daniel Sorensen snaps down. The big thing to kind of keep an eye on is with Willie Gay getting in trouble off the field today as we record. It's going to be interesting to see if Willie Gay plays or if they end up having to play more Anthony Hitchens. Because Anthony Hitchens has been more limited. Anthony Hitchens and Nick Bolton together would leave the Chiefs really susceptible to a lot more passes over the middle of the field. Those are kind of the big ones. But yeah, Daniel Sorensen, if Daniel Sorensen is forced into action in coverage, Josh Allen should be going after him every chance he gets.
Yeah, and that's a big, you know, sort of theme that you brought up earlier about Chris Jones moving more inside. I mean, it sort of just makes the whole decision that they made, you know, before the season started, which involved them moving Chris Jones more outside to account for, you know, their lack of presence at edge rusher. It just kind of makes it all a moot point at this point, you know. And I guess it's better late than never, but the whole idea of putting Chris Jones outside and just seemingly limiting his production and what he could do in terms of impacting a you know, a football game just kind of just feels like a wasted sort of movement at this point. You know, am I crazy for saying that or?
No, I mean, I think it was an experiment just because they have a lot of defensive linemen,
mm-hmm.
and they were not sold that Frank Clark was going to be enough outside. Yeah. But it just – Chris Jones is just not a good fit on the outside. He's just not as effective.
Yeah. You know, he's real quick inside for most guards. He's real powerful inside for most guards as well. Just sort of an athletic freak that's really turned into one of the game's best defensive players. So that was just my two cents rambling on that. And, you know, along with that Chiefs defense resurgence, have you seen anything with the secondary that's maybe changed a bit?
I mean, like I said, I think the big thing is just Sorensen playing less.
Mm-hmm.
Because the rest of their secondary hasn't really changed a whole lot.
Okay.
Tyrann Mathieu is still very good. Taking Sorensen out and putting Juan Thornhill in. Thornhill is not as good as he was as a rookie, but he is obviously a huge upgrade over Sorensen. Legarius Sneed, his charting numbers don't really reflect how good he's been. And then Charvarius Ward has been quite good. Both of those guys, if you get them downfield in jump ball situations, they're going to lose sometimes, but they're good enough that they're happy to take their chances.
Yeah. And you know, because of the emergence of Legarius Sneed, Charvarius Ward, last season, it was kind of weird to see that secondary sort of fall off in terms of quality earlier on in the season. So it's good to see secondary starting to rebound a bit as the season has went on offensively. And I think, you know, offensively, the Chiefs, their resurgence can sort of go hand in hand with, you know, their defense, because earlier on in the season, we were talking about the Chiefs struggling because they were, you know, Patrick Mahomes was running into too many turnovers because he was trying to force the ball down the field when teams were running a lot more cover two shells and forcing Patrick Mahomes to throw underneath and take what's given to him. But, you know, ever since that loss the Titans gave them in the middle part of the season, that Chiefs offense has sort of found a little bit of a formula. Has it been to maybe their run game maybe taking a bit more of a role in this offense? Or has Patrick Mahomes simply started playing more in structure, taking what defenses are giving him and just taking the easy throws underneath so the more explosive plays can open up over the top?
So I think Jerick McKinnon has been a good find for them just because they've had close to nothing from their running backs. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has not really been a great pick for them so far. Mm-hmm. But they have an offensive line. So giving them Jerick McKinnon and somebody who can actually maximize the holes that are being created has been a help. But that said, I think the biggest jump in the Chiefs is obviously the passing game. I think they settled down. They stopped pressing so much. The receivers aren't dropping as many passes, which is part of it, because that was a big part of Mahomes' turnover problem earlier in the year. The fact that Mahomes isn't pressing as much has helped. Honestly, I think it's that. And I think Byron Pringle has emerged as kind of like a reliable secondary option. Mecole Hardman has done an okay job. Neither one of these guys is like world beating, but I think that they'll be able to do enough to help the Chiefs move the ball.
Yeah, and quickly before we move over to the Bills side of things, Tyreek Hill hasn't really seen the same amount of success in terms of getting explosive plays over the top in the passing game. Has that been to the heavy prevalent, you know, heavy preference of teams playing more cover two and trying to limit those explosive plays over the top? Or has Tyreek Hill simply just not been the same explosive threat that he's been in the past?
I think a lot of it is just the way that teams treat Tyreek Hill. They focus on him to bracket him and try and take him out of the game. They'll devote a lot of attention over the top to make sure that he doesn't get free downfield. I mean, it might be somewhat related to the fact that he's getting a little bit older, but I think it's mostly the way people cover him.
Yeah, and I just have to ask that because it's been weird to see Tyreek Hill not be the same explosive self that we've seen him be in the past. So maybe he'll get some sort of rebound in terms of explosiveness against the Bills on Sunday. But that doesn't really seem likely because the Bills defense possesses a safety by the name of Micah Hyde that has some of the more impressive range that I've seen from a free safety this season. Just go back to that play that he had against the Patriots in the wild card round. Next gen stats, per next gen stats, he ran over 21 yards
in just under 3 seconds, you know, just to pick off a deep ball from Mac Jones, snatch it out of the air and get the ball back to the Bills offense. So that Bills defense, you know, in terms of metrics, some metrics have that Bills defense being that the, you know, arguably maybe the best defense in all of football because the metrics favor them so much. Are you really getting that same type of feeling? Are you seeing, you know, stuff on film to really back that claim up? Because, you know, in my experience watching the Bills, that defense has been pretty physical, pretty good. They've had good corner play. You know, of course, they've had to, you know, compromise because Tre'Davious White, you know, had that serious injuries now out for the season. But what's your thoughts on this Bills defense and how they'll be able to try to attack their Chiefs offense to slow them down?
So I think the Bills have the so there's kind of two parts to it. I think the Bills defense, the big weakness that they have is against power running teams. Mm-hmm. They're not going to run into that with the Chiefs, or if they do run into that with the Chiefs, it'd be a big change for Reed. All season long, me and other, I've talked to a bunch of Chief analysts who kind of felt the same way. The Chiefs offensive line looks like it's good enough to just, if they wanted to play bully ball, they could, but they haven't. They at their core, they are a spread team and they'll run out of spread sets. And every once in a while they'll mix in some other runs, but they're not, this isn't the Kyle Shanahan offense where they're going to go heavy on you and just run down your throat. For the Bills, that's a relief because we saw against the Colts how the Bills can't really handle that. Mm-hmm. But that said, against passing teams, the biggest weakness that they're going to have is the fact that they don't necessarily have a premier corner to match up with Tyreek Hill. But Leslie Frazier, their defensive coordinator, has done a phenomenal job of kind of making the pieces more than what they are. They are more than a sum of, they're more than a, the sum of parts is more than the individual pieces. I think that they should be okay. The big thing is Mahomes, because he's so good at making plays out of structure. If the pass rush doesn't get home and hurry him and he can get out of the pocket and escape, I do think that there could be some big plays to be had.
Yeah. And I don't know about this Bills defense, you know, like you said, they do struggle against power teams because, you know, they don't have the most physical presences inside to, you know, at least help compromise for that lack of physicality against those teams that want to run the football. But against those finesse teams, maybe they do have some sort of a chance, you know, even without Tre'Davious White, because Leslie Frazier is such a good coordinator. And like you said, he's making those pieces on that defensive side of the ball, look better than what they are. So really what it boils down to and what I'm trying to ask you here is that this Chiefs offense, you know, like you said, they're a spread team. They run a lot of spread sets, a lot of five wide. And if they don't run five wide, they run a lot of three wide receiver sets, with Travis Kelce, you know, coming in as a designated tight end slash receiver and maybe having an extra back there to help with pass protection or help in the pass game as well. So what do you make of this Bills defense against this Chiefs offense? Because we saw it last year how the Bills defense just couldn't do anything. They simply just couldn't do anything about that Chiefs offense. They were throwing the ball all over the field. It was just a matchup nightmare for them. Does it really look like the same sort of matchup this year as opposed to last year? Or do the Bills have more of a fighting chance to slow down that Chiefs offense?
Oh, man, I think the Bills could definitely win this game. They definitely have the personnel to match up with the Chiefs and come out ahead. It's just going to come down to if they can make Mahomes play the short game a lot more, keep him from getting outside the pocket and getting a chunk play. And then it just comes down to if Josh Allen can score enough.
Yeah, and speaking of Josh Allen, you gave me a great opportunity to springboard into the next topic of discussion that I wanted to get with. Regarding that Bills offense, I think the big deal with the Bills offense this year has been their lack of, you know, I guess you could say their lack of true ability to run the football, you know, aside from Josh Allen running wild, whether it's, you know, out of structure, scrambling in the passing game, or whether Brian Daboll just draws up some design quarterback runs for Allen. But in recent weeks, we've seen Devin Singletary really come on as a maybe a serviceable option aside from Allen in a running game. Have you seen that really? Because in the past, I know me personally, I haven't been all that high on Singletary because I just don't see his value as a maybe as a physical presence in the run game. Maybe a physical presence the Bills have needed in the run game to help complement Josh Allen and the finesse of that Bills offense. So what's your outlook on this Bills offense right now? Because, you know, against New England, Josh Allen was great. He was running all over the field. Devin Singletary looked great. Dawson Knox looked exceptional. And that offensive line really kept Josh Allen clean. But practically, they were perfect throughout the day, you know, aside from the kneel down that they had at the last drive of the game against New England.
Yeah, I mean, I think Singletary's fine. And I think their offensive line's okay. But again, I think their running game is built around RPOs. Mm-hmm. And those are going to depend on Josh Allen being a good enough threat and doing enough as a passer to keep the line from attacking and taking away the running game. Because I think if you can isolate and force Josh Allen to just have to carry the offense completely on his own and keep and get pressure on him, that's going to be an issue. And with the way that they use Josh Allen as a running threat, what you can do is you can try and dictate where he's going to go and trap him. Now, it's easier said than done, but I think the Chiefs could do it. I think USA Today's Mark Schofield actually pointed that out for the Touchdown Wire. Their preview is that that's something that they could do in terms of because so many of their runs are read plays, if you can force Allen to keep the ball and leave him open to running where a defender's getting ready to trap him and hit him, you could slow him down because you could create a lot of contact on him, and he's not going to be able to run 25 times.
Yeah, of course, because, you know, of course you don't want your quarterback to take that many hits, but, you know, I don't think any quarterback is designed to repeatedly, you know, take those hits time after time unless you're Cam Newton, who somehow survived all those hits for years. So, you know, with that Bills offense, they have an assortment of weapons like the Chiefs, maybe not, you know, in terms of the same quality, but in terms of quantity, they possess a good amount of weapons, you know. Stephon Diggs, obviously, you know, Dawson Knox, Cole Beasley, Gabriel Davis, and even Isaiah McKenzie's really came on during the last, you know, back half or back fourth of the season when Cole Beasley was dealing with COVID and McKenzie just, you know, took that chance, found success, and springboarded himself into receiving more chances within the offense. So, I know you said you think that the Bills really have a decent chance at winning this game, but in terms of, you know, this Bills offense, what do you think they specifically have to do to win this game aside from the whole turnover issue and aside from Josh Allen, you know, just falling off the face of the earth and turning into the bad Josh Allen we've, you know, seen at times in the past?
Well, the Chiefs defense is kind of soft between the tackles and they're not great off a right end. I also think that they don't do a great job defending running backs in the passing game. They are not great at defending passes to the right. So I do think that there are ways to move the ball in this Chiefs defense. And again, like if Josh Allen looks like he did against the Patriots, I don't think it really matters what the Chiefs defense does. Josh Allen, when he's on, this is the best team in football. It's just, can you get him off kilter?
Yeah, and, you know, who knows if Steve Spagnuolo has the brains and if he has the personnel to do that. But Josh Allen has shown in the past that if he wants to screw up a game on his own, he will do it because he has a tendency to get too aggressive and just not see things on the field. So we'll see if that, you know, Chiefs defense can really slow down Josh Allen. I don't think I would bet on it, but it's certainly possible, you know. but, you know, with all that said, let's move into a prediction for this game. Joe, it's the biggest game of the weekend, you know, in terms of on paper calculations. The Chiefs and Bills are the two best remaining teams in the playoff field. So who do you see out of this, you know, matchup winning and advancing to the AFC Championship game?
So I think it's going to be very close if both teams are at their best. The one thing that if both teams are playing at the level that they actually can, like their apex, I do think it would go to the Bills, just because the Bills are a more complete team. But that said, I do trust Mahomes more, and that's what I'm going to probably go with. I think it'll be close, though. I think it'll be maybe 3, maybe 7 at most.
See, I'm tempted to pick the Bills because it just feels like it's their time to finally shed that label of being, you know, little brother or second place and just finally springboarded themselves into the conversation as, you know, the favorite in the AFC. But I think I'm going to roll with, you know, your way of thinking here. I think I'll go with the Chiefs here because it's easier to trust Patrick Mahomes more. It's easier to trust Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy as play callers more. And it's simply, you know, it's the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, man. They've made so many big plays and so many timely moments over the past couple of years, you know, and that's the reason they've had so much success, you know, despite their shortcomings this year. They found a way to turn it around, and here they are, you know, standing as potential favorites to go to the Super Bowl once again. So I'll roll with the Chiefs here, maybe. And I think I'll go a little bit more high scoring here. I think I'll go Chiefs 35, Bills 33. A little bit of a close game there. So I'm really, really excited to see that game and the rest of the games on the Vision of the Weekend. Joe, that's all the games we have on tap. But you know, before we get out of here, I want to do two things. First, I want to give you 2 minutes. 2 minutes. You can just think of anything. 2 minutes. Just talk about whether it's sports related, something that's personal or not personal, but dear to you in the real world right now. If you have anything to talk about for 2 minutes, I'll set the timer and I'll let you have your your time, man.
I don't know if I really have anything worth talking about for 2 minutes, but I do think that the game between the Chiefs and the Bills is essentially the AFC championship game, because I think whichever team comes out of that game, again, if they play at their best for that game and the AFC championship, I think that that team is going to end up going on to the Super Bowl. I just don't think either the Bengals or the Titans really match up with either one of them very well. The Titans do have the ability to go ground and pound, so that might help them. But I do think that their secondary would have a ton of issues with the wide receiving core of either the Bills or the Chiefs. Other than that, I hope the Broncos don't hire Dan Quinn.
I saw a good interviews of how, you know, Dan Quinn might be one of the favorites for that Broncos head coaching job. Do you have any favorites for that Broncos head coaching job? You know, personal favorites for you.
I hope it's Nathaniel Hackett. Firstly, obviously the Aaron Rodgers part of it's a big part of, you know, everybody's hopes. But even if you look beyond that, Aaron Rodgers, Nathaniel Hackett looks like a really good candidate. He is 42 years old. He has had an offensive coordinator job 3 times now. He has called plays before. He helped Blake Bortles get to an AFC championship game. That team actually was 13th in red zone DVOA, which is wild to think about because Blake Bortles sucks. So I like the idea of Nathaniel Hackett coming in, whether you have Aaron Rodgers or not. Yeah, honestly, anybody but Jonathan Gannon. They're talking to 10 candidates. Jonathan Gannon's my least favorite. Yeah. I'm pretty queasy about Dan Quinn just because everything that went down with Atlanta was kind of shaky. But the big thing is, yeah, just not Jonathan Gannon.
Well, we'll see how that head coaching process shakes out, because it's shaping up to be really wild, you know, not just for the Broncos, for the rest of the league. So I hope you get your wish with Hackett. If you get Quinn or you get Gannon, then I'll give you a pat on the back and I'll tell you everything's going to be okay, Joe. I appreciate it. All right. Joe, before we get out of here, why don't you just plug your stuff, your socials, where people can find your work, and we can get out of here, man.
So I am on Twitter at @JoeRowe_NFL, and you can read my work at Mile High Report or listen to my podcast, Cover 2 Broncos. And yeah, go Broncos.
Yeah, certainly check out all that stuff, especially the tweets. Joe Rowe puts out some, you know, insightful stuff each and every week, whether it's Broncos or relegated to, or not relegated, but compared to the entirety of the NFL. So I want to check that out if you do get the chance. Joe, I want to thank you for coming on here again. I read a Thursday night just to, you know, record and talk about divisional round weekend. Really appreciate you. In terms of show schedule, we'll certainly have a recap out, about divisional round weekend. Maybe this weekend, Monday, we'll see what Eric has in terms of work. So stay on the lookout for that. But aside from that, we can get out of here. Hope you have a good night, day, whichever time you're listening to this. And come back here next time to watch, listen to me and Eric and potentially another guest talk more about football, the game me and Eric both love with our hearts. Spread the pod wherever you can. We'd really appreciate it. And peace out.